Philip Shaw joins us again, senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. How about the Dow? How about that, huh, Philip?
Yeah, market's been doing well so far this year, and thanks again for having me. Always appreciate it.
It's funny because it seemed like it took us forever to get to 40, and then we kind of flirted with that line, and you just wondered, 41, really? 42? 43? 44 would be next, if I'm not mistaken. I wonder what's the limit on this bull run right now?
You know, a lot of what we're seeing right now is pretty similar to what we see coming out of a bear market, out of a, you know, down market, is pretty strong growth back the first couple of years. Whether this is going to be an extended bull market or not, it's a good question. My take is we have some room to go on this and a lot of good data that's showing it.
Like what?
Well, we're seeing still a lot of, you know, strong data points throughout the economy. We're seeing low unemployment, and especially with the expectation that the Fed is going to continue to reduce interest rates even further than they have, is going to take a lot of the pressure off the economy, a lot of pressure off these companies, and allow them to finance, build, and continue to grow.
Seems like the obsession with the Fed's jigger in the rates has sort of tapered off, but maybe because they got that half point in last time. Do you think there's another quarter point coming up?
You know, it's always a good question when it comes to the Fed. Not quite a coin flip, but, you know, we have two more meetings this year. The market's expectation is that we'll see another quarter of a point decrease in the November meeting, and then we'll see another quarter of a point decrease in December.
Really?
I don't think we're going to see both. I think we're going to see a decrease in November, and then they're going to hold pat for the time being and wait for some more data to come in to see what they need to do.
What could upset this apple cart, Philip? What could go wrong? And I know, of course, anything could go wrong, but I mean, things do seem to be, it's a soft landing and things seem to be going well. So I wonder what would be a dark cloud on the horizon.
Yeah, I love the way you put that, because anything could happen, right? But the major concerns we run into are a resurgence in inflation. So if we start seeing inflation rates coming back up, that's going to pause what the Fed's looking to do. So one of the big reasons they're decreasing rates is they feel they've really wrapped their arms around the continued inflation. If they start seeing that spike up again, they're likely to pause. I would be surprised to see them raise rates again from here. That's a big one. If we see a sharp rise in unemployment, if we start seeing layoffs throughout the economy, that's more of a impetus for them to decrease rates from here.
Well, what was the latest inflation report? Didn't it tick up just a tiny bit? No?
I mean, the expectation is it's going to, you know, be around this level for a time being. The Fed's goal is always that 2% mark. It's unlikely that we actually get to a, you know, 2% mark before they start really making decisions around lower rates.
Yeah.
As long as we're trending that direction, that's the healthy piece we're going for.
Well, if it was 2% or if it was 2.4%, would I notice the difference? Would the market notice the difference? Would businesses notice the difference?
In the short term, no. In the short term, you're not going to notice a major difference between a 2% and a 2.4. The long-term trend of that starts becoming expensive, of course. I will say the bigger one that I've seen, and I'm not sure how well they account for this, has been less of continued inflation and more of continued what we call shrinkflation, where we're the prices at the grocery store aren't continuing to increase as much, or we're starting to see smaller items and less money, you know, less value for what we're buying.
Yeah, right. No kidding. Well, in fact, what was the story today that some of the chip manufacturers out there, owned by PepsiCo, I think it is, have decided that they have to start putting bonus packs in, or at least a couple of packs with more chips, because people are very upset. It's kind of funny because we have a vending machine at the radio station, and when you get a bag of chips for, what is it, a dollar? It's not many chips. And when I once in a while get that, I almost think, well, that's good. I don't need any more chips than I'm getting. But but that's not that. That's not how people
forcing you onto a diet.
Yes. Well, it sates my appetite, or at least it scratches that itch. If there was twice as many chips in there, I would eat them all. And I'm kind of glad, even though it's a complete ripoff, that I'm only getting half a bag of chips. But that's not what this is about. Philip Shaw is a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. I listed some companies like Cisco and Netflix and McDonald's. I think you know what they all have in common, Philip. What is it?
They're all hitting all-time highs. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, 52-week highs, maybe all-time for some of them.
52-week highs, yeah, for some of them, and definitely all-time.
In fact, well, put it this way, the number of stocks at the S&P 500 that hit 52-week highs are 38. I don't know, 500 companies, 38 at all-time highs. So how do I interpret that? Is that pretty good, huh?
It's pretty good, and the nice thing we've been seeing is we've been seeing this market rally expand. The breadth of the market rally expand outside of just the handful of names that we hear about all the time. So instead of it just being driven by, you know, NVIDIA, Apple, Microsoft, Google, right, we're starting to see this really broaden out, which is encouraging for this to stick around and continue.
Yeah. NVIDIA is down and has actually popped back up now, too. It seems like everything seems to be going well. Is there a sector, or let's just leave it at that, that you think is oversold right now, that maybe is overvalued, that is?
Overvalued. I'm concerned about AI and the run-up of companies like NVIDIA. Is to an extent, this feels a little bit of like it did in the late 90s, where we're assigning, you know, incredible market valuations to anything that's related to AI. Where we're not really seeing revenue from it yet. We're not seeing profits, we're not seeing revenue. So it's a lot of speculation on the potential of what this could be. I think AI is going to be like the internet for us. It's going to be a major driver of growth in the next 10 years, the next 20 years. In the short term, this could be very overvalued.
Yeah. Well, if you're talking about the dot-com phenomenon, where anything that was dot-com, computers were everywhere now, websites and apps were just exploding. And I remember some of the Super Bowl ads where they were kind of laughing at their own companies and saying, you know, we don't even know what we're doing yet, but you've got to go to our website. And it just seemed to be this sort of you can't miss phenomenon. I hope that this AI thing is different than that.
I hope so, too, but I hear a lot of similarities there where you say, you know, we don't know what we're doing yet, but you got to go to our website. It's almost like we don't know what this AI platform can do yet, but you've got to buy it. You've got to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right. And, yeah. Yeah.
And,
fair
and
enough.
I mean, it doesn't mean it's all going to crash, but I'm always hesitant to become too excited about it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But you did say that all this notwithstanding, that the market is rising because of a lot of companies right now, that it's broader based.
Yeah, and that's been very encouraging to see. Obviously, you know, we'll see how the rest of the year continues. We have obviously a few major events coming up, especially as it comes to the Fed meetings. We have an election coming up, which tends not to be a major market driver, but at least in the short term, these are all pretty significant events, and a couple of them are happening the same week, just, you know, what, 3 weeks from now?
But are you talking about the election? Yeah.
We have an election, and we have a Fed meeting 2 days later.
Oh, yeah. Well, so there you go. Well, you know, it's interesting, though, because you're not the only person to remind us that whatever happens in November, the presidential election, is probably not going to make or break the markets. And I am surprised to hear that, just because it seems like Donald Trump's plans for tariffs would be so onerous for business that there would be a negative reaction. I also caution myself to remember that just because Donald Trump wants something, even if he becomes president, doesn't mean he's going to get something. You would imagine that there might be the need for congressional approval, or maybe there's just a lot of bluster in some of this, and he's not really going to do what he says he's going to do on the campaign trail. It's easy to say and almost simple to understand, even if the misunderstanding, even if it's a misunderstanding. But it's interesting to me that the idea that Donald Trump would win would not injure the markets that much. But you're not the first person to suggest that.
And the reason I suggest that, and I think this was, it might have been Bill Clinton that was saying it, was, you know, the president can say they want to do all of these things. They can campaign on all these ideas. And then when they're in office, they find out, well, some of the powers are very limited, and they cannot do all of the things they might have wanted to. And, you know, at the end of the day, what drives the market is people looking to build, innovate, and, you know, invent new products and services and grow companies. And as long as we're encouraged to do that, as long as we have a country that can, you know, prosper and exist in, my long-term outlook is always going to be positive.
Yeah. Well, I guess the flip side of all of that, what I just said, would be that the tax policies, were Donald Trump to become president, Republicans to control the two chambers, would be favorable to the wealthiest and businesses. So I suppose that's a moderating force there. I got 30 seconds left. Anything you want to say about the housing market right now?
So housing markets starting to show some signs of weakness in terms of, you know, we've had a number of housing starts. Permits are low. Really, I think the biggest driver there is going to be the interest rates. So, you know, if you're somebody who had a, you know, high interest mortgage, we're probably not seeing great refinance opportunities yet. Once we start seeing those, we'll start seeing some better strength in the housing market.
Yeah. Philip Shaw is a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Always nice to talk to you, Philip. Thanks for your ideas.
Thank you, John.
Catching up with a local business now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. A couple of years ago, the city of Chicago issued 26 community development grants, which helped businesses get started. This was part of the COVID relief funds. It served a myriad of purposes. Angelica Acevedo and her family were the recipients of one of those grants. They have a business called Magnifico Coffee Roasters. Angelica, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you? I'm doing great. Thank you for having us.
You sound great. How's business?
You know, we are very grateful. It's been good. It's been really, really good. We had construction in front of our storefront, which was a little painful, but the community has been so welcoming that it's kept us afloat.
How long has Magnifico been up and running?
So we opened a year and a half ago, like you said, thanks to in partnership with the grant from the city of Chicago, which was, a gift, but we've been open a year and a half.
And it's a coffee roaster, so do people buy ground coffee there and hot coffee as well?
Correct. So we specialize in roasting specialty coffee from Colombia and Latin America. But we also do have the brick and mortar, so people can come in and, you know, enjoy our favorite pastries that were some of our favorite baked goods that we grew up eating in Colombia. So we partner with other bakeries that are Colombian-owned. And then, yes, we also sell our beans. And in addition, we are also helping supply coffee to other coffee shops and businesses. So we have also a wholesale business that we're, you know, so excited to start developing.
Wow. You're in Avondale on North Milwaukee, 3063 North Milwaukee. I saw something the other day about the percentage of coffee in America, which is imported. And I think it was 99%. Mm-hmm. So you get the beans from Colombia, do you?
We do. Yeah, our house coffee is predominantly Colombian, but we also are importing from other countries like Mexico, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Peru at the moment. But all of our house coffee is Colombian.
What's the difference between Colombian coffee and other coffees? Would I notice the difference?
Depends on how it's roasted. So in Colombia, you know, we are so known because there's the ideal location and conditions and climate. For us, you know, what we do is my brother, who's our master roaster, he's the scientist behind our roast. He what he does is how you interpret the bean and how he chooses to pull out the notes in the roast. So I think it's you would notice if you like the light versus the medium or the dark, more in terms of that lens.
What are people asking for these days?
So it's interesting. I think a lot of people are very used to dark roast, but they're really enjoying the medium. Some of our favorite or best sellers are the medium and light roast that we're serving.
How do you compete against, say, Starbucks or other chains? What's your niche in the market, would you say?
So that's a great question. I think for us, we are very hyper-focused in our community. So for us, that is like how for us is that that's how we compete. We have to win the hearts of our community and partner with our community. We are also, you know, unlike a Starbucks now that they're very transactional. We want it to be the opposite. We really wanted to create a space where people connect. Hopefully you put your phone down for a bit and have a conversation. Part of our culture that we're instilling and even in our staff is like take the moment to get to know the people that are, you know, ordering the coffee. So we're not in a rush to, like, you know, check you out. We want to have that moment and really have hospitality behind our store and our brand. So That's how we're competing, just being trying to be authentically us and leading with heart.
I don't live in your neighborhood, but there is a coffee shop in my neighborhood, more over by Lincoln Square, and they know people's names and they ask about your kids. And I don't know if their coffee is more expensive or less, but it's very easy to walk in there because it just feels so personal, right?
Yeah. And that's I think our goal, too, is going back. We do want to get to know our customers. And like for us, it's so interesting how we recognize the privilege that now we're part of people's lives. And then we treat that with such care because we know for us is beyond the coffee. The coffee is our way in to get to know the community, to host events. You know, we have like DJ events now every week, but we're inviting people from the community that are maybe starting out as DJs or as a passion. So it's been really rewarding to sell coffee because we are now providing a living for our staff, and that's also a privilege and a responsibility. But the fact that we get to know the people and know their names, and you know, I've even like volunteered to watch our customers' dogs. Right? That's how like truly important and committed we are to our community.
On Helica Acevedo on a line, Magnifico Coffee Roasters in Avondale. You mentioned you're expanding. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we started, you know, our coffee shop, we have baked goods and we, of course, sell our coffee. But now we're starting to extend our knowledge and our to other coffee shops that might not roast. So we are able to provide the coffee and then we're also able to help guide them through like an operational lens of like the equipment and how to, you know, kind of help them get started. We are lucky with our family. We have my brother who's, you know, like has the developing the palate, but also has the technical aspect of the operations. You have my sister who's the other co-owner who helped us with the architecture and the sign. We have branding, my husband. So all together, we're able to support our customers through a lens that is richer than just buy our coffee. That's how we're expanding.
I want to make the perfect cup of coffee at home. I'll use your ground beans. Do I have to use cold water, paper filter, or metal filter? What tips do you have for me?
Oh my goodness, I'm gonna have to call a friend. Call my brother. It depends what kind of machine. Like if you have an espresso machine or you just have a drip. So many options. But I'm gonna have to phone a friend for that one.
That's a terrible answer, by the way. But like you said, everybody has a responsibility in the business.
That's
there. How many?
Yeah.
How many employees? How many family members are involved?
So my entire family. So it's six of us. We, again, like I'm doing the marketing and the business aspect of it, but then we have three other employees in terms of our front of house. So it's five of us as a family getting
sounds
in there.
Sounds like a good use of that community grant money. This business is is thriving. Magnifico Coffee Roasters in Avondale and Helica Acevedo. Nice to talk to you. Our best to the family and the business.
Thank you. Thank you. Please stop by when you can.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's a report that the University of Illinois is abandoning plans to build a research and teaching facility at the proposed site of the 78 in the South Loop. Cranes reports the school will split the $285 million project into two parts, locating some of it at the new quantum technology campus on the far south side and some of it in office space in downtown Chicago. Some construction work had already started on the site near 15th and Wells. The report says the U of I wants to take advantage of the momentum surrounding quantum computing. The state of Illinois has committed $500 million to the site at the former U.S. steel plant. The Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park hopes to attract companies and research institutions. Northbrook-based Allstate has posted $630 million in catastrophe losses related to Hurricane Helene, and the costs are still being tabulated. The figure does not include losses related to Hurricane Milton. The figure is more than double the $317 million in losses Allstate suffered 1 year ago. Losses for the third quarter have reached nearly $1.7 billion. Analysts say both storms could cost the insurance industry as much as $55 billion. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and Jack Frost has been nipping at our plants. We'll hear from Mr. Fizz about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Mr. Fizz, Jack Frost has been showing up the last few nights, hasn't he?
Yeah, and that nipped the tops on a lot of stuff, but that's just a sign of things to come. I want to talk a little bit about tomatoes. Even if the vines have been killed back, the tomatoes are still good unless they were frozen. Select them by ripeness, the ripest down to the greenest. Wrap them up, each one, in a piece of newspaper, and set these out on a bench in your basement or in the storeroom in order so that you know the ripest ones are at the left and the others go on down the line, something like that. And use them as they ripen. It may take several weeks for the greenest ones to ripen. Summer squash, these are the things like zucchinis. You can pick these too. Set them in a cool, dry place, or you can refrigerate them, and they will last several weeks. Now, if you're afraid that they're going to wilt, wrap them up in a plastic wrap, and that will keep the moisture in them. You can harvest your herbs at this time too. You can take the plants out, actually dig them up, pot them up, and grow them under lights indoors, or you can harvest the herbs, and I like to dry them on screen, set in the basement. And once they're dry, store them in paper bags in a dry place. The cold crops like broccoli, cauliflower, and so forth will tolerate a frost. In fact, they'll tolerate a freeze. They get tastier with the cold, but you don't want them to freeze solid. If that happens, you want to bring them in quickly so you can actually store them out in the garden. You can also store the root crops out in the garden, carrots, beets, parsnips, turnips, and so forth. Store them in the ground. Mulch them in to keep the ground from freezing on them so you can pull them when you want them. And you'll find out that the longer they stay out in the cold, the sweeter they're going to get. Eventually, the winter will catch up and put an end to the outdoor stuff. If you've properly prepared, a lot of the summer's bounty will provide for you much of the rest of the winter. So enjoy.
Will do. Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, on the food calendar, nothing on the calendar for today. But you can live it up tomorrow with National Whole Hog Barbecue Day and National Seafood Bisque Day. And, hey, it's John Williams' birthday tomorrow. And on Sunday, it is Chicken and Waffles Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Santiago Leon joins us now, managing partner in charge of operations at Spearhead Hospitality, which means he's in charge of a bunch of businesses. Thanks for joining us, Santiago. How are you?
Hi, John. Thank you. I'm doing great, and it's such an honor to be in your program. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, we like finding out about businesses in the city, all kinds. What do you all do then? I see your portfolio of businesses, but just tell us what you all do.
Well, we're a small company. We started with the Ruby Hotel in Wicker Park. small hotel. It was actually the first hotel in Wicker Park, so that was interesting. And we've expanded post-COVID, or actually during COVID, more into the food and beverage world, although we also were able to take over a hostel, a youth hostel. Well, it is actually a hybrid of hostel and hotel,
right,
called Getaway, which is located in Lincoln Park, or close to Lincoln Park. We opened, during COVID, an Italian restaurant and an eatery inside a new office building. That was obviously challenging times. Huh. Back then, we also opened a Mexican restaurant in Fulton Market. A lot of lessons learned about that one.
Why do you say that?
We were given this opportunity during COVID. I think most of our projects were born out of the necessity of certain businesses looking for someone to operate their businesses in a time when a lot of people didn't, or a lot of companies didn't really want to take over new projects, especially in that time. So
I understand that. I'm going to interrupt you. I want to ask about that. So you have these various venues, a hotel or a restaurant. Are those your businesses that you're, I guess those are your businesses you're running, but sometimes in a hotel. So maybe a hotel wants a nice eatery there, and then you move in and provide the food or beverage in that space. Is that it?
Well, we manage the hotel as well, in the case of the Roby. So we don't own the assets or the buildings. We are the management company. So we manage the place, of course, and we develop concepts for our owners.
And is it difficult to staff these places these days?
Oh, extremely difficult. I think that's one of, I wouldn't say it's the biggest challenge. I think it was the biggest challenge coming out of COVID, but it remains, one of the biggest challenges. I think it's been hard to compete with these huge companies who are offering very good salaries or wages to people. Just to mention a few, Amazon and some others who, it's hard to compete. But I also think that there was a change in the culture of people wanting to work in the restaurant industry or the hospitality industry. And that has been challenging, of course. Staffing remains to be an issue.
I mean, I think we're back from COVID now. We don't have to worry about masks. If somebody gets COVID, they treat it like the flu. We all seem to be over that. And yet I still see the challenge that businesses have getting staff in place, training them and keeping them.
Yeah, that's a huge challenge. And also, well, the labor costs. I think that has been the biggest issue we've had. And I think that's true for most of the restaurants out there.
Yeah.
The average restaurant pre-COVID was running profit margins of 5%, if not less. And
wow.
Yeah. And food has increased, let's say, I want to say from 2017 to now, maybe food is about 25% more expensive. So,
yeah.
But I think that for the most part, that increase in cost has been, we've been able to pass that on to, some of the customers, but labor, that has been the biggest challenge by far. If you go back to 2017 to now, labor is 81% higher than it was back then. And of course, it's although sales are getting better or increasing from back then, mostly just because of average check or inflationary increases, there's no amount of sales that can offset an 80% increase in labor. So,
well, these are some of the challenges you face. Now, I've got less than a minute, but Clever Coyote, Cabana Club, The Up Room, which is spectacular, Canal Street Eatery and Market. Just take me to one of those places for a second here. What's one of your properties that you're especially proud of?
Well, I'm especially proud of Canal Street Eatery and Market and Ballador, which we've recently opened. Which is next door to the Roby, but it's not part of the hotel. But Canal Street, I think it's a fabulous place. It's within the new BMO tower at 320 South Canal. It's a beautiful restaurant. It has an eatery. It has the market. We open at 7 a.m. The market opens at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
We bake everything in-house. And then the eatery portion, which is the restaurant, Italian restaurant, open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. All the pasta, all the pizzas. This place is spectacular. It has a very nice view to a private park within the building. And we actually are launching a great special today. So we're going to have the Italiano Fridays. And it's pretty much a $15, I don't want to call it all you can eat because it sounds terrible, but call it bottomless or whatever you like. But it's going it's $15 for pizzas, pastas, and salads every Friday starting today. I think that's the best value by far. And again, it's very high quality. It's a beautiful setting and a great service. And if you haven't been there, I really suggest you check it out.
Good enough. And refresh our memory now. The name of that property is what?
Canal Street.
Canal Street Eatery. Which is
on,
sure.
It's on Canal Street. Canal Street Eatery and Market.
One of the Spearhead Hospitality properties. You can find out more, get all the details. It's spearheadhospitality.com. Santiago Leon, the managing partner there, in charge of operations. Good story. Keep up the good work, Santiago. Thanks for your time.
No, thank you, John. Have a nice day.